Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can send us your comments about who you would like to see the Winnipeg Jets go after in terms of defensemen and goaltenders on the free agent market. Maybe you want to see them re-sign their own guys. Do you think they're ready to elevate their roles? Let us know on Twitter at Illegal Curve.
Also, UFC 161 is at the MTS Center tonight. We've got Troy Westwood and Hustler at the block party.
It's Jay and Hustler, but
Jay and Hustler. Sorry, Jay and Troy, both in the big show, but tell us who you'd like to see in the octagon of the five members of Illegal Curve. Dave Manuk is in there as well. Who would you like to see in a scrap? I know Hustler wants to see Remus and I in a pizza burger eating competition, but who'd you like to see in the octagon? Tweet us at Illegal Curve. Drew, back to you.
Thank you very much, Jesse. That was very good. Looking at the...
Is that a live spot from the studio?
Yeah. As he just did a live cut-in, even though he's sitting right next to me, which
that's
is
right.
really odd
yeah.
to do on
that's
radio.
How we, that's how we do.
First guy I want on the list, I mean, and I'm just sort of looking at guys who can eat minutes. Because, you know, these are...
Right.
You know,
not guys that can eat omelets.
Right. You know, we got guys who can eat omelets. It's the three of us. Guys, you know, because I mentioned, you know, the time on ice that Hainsey had last year. You know, what about... What's your thoughts on a guy like Mike Koska from Toronto?
Interesting guy that you mentioned. Mike Koska, if you remember Pavel Rosa... Pardon me, not Pavel Rosa. That was another guy. Marco Rosa, who played for the Manitoba Moose.
Yes.
He's friends with Mike Koska. Now it's kind of a famous story that Mike Koska was going to play in Europe because he didn't think that he had an NHL career ahead of him. And the Toronto Maple Leafs gave him a chance because they were having problems on defense. You remember Mike Komisarek wasn't working out. And so he ended up getting a full-time gig with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Another guy, Richie, that he's more of a steady defenseman, a guy that was playing in the AHL and before that... before the Leafs, and he's another guy that you know what to expect, and he made the Leafs, and the Leafs were a pretty darn good team last year. They were a playoff team. You can't take anything away from Mike Koska, so the thing with that is you could get him for a lot less than, say, a guy like Andrew Ferentz or Douglas Murray. Those guys are going to be $3.5, maybe $4 million players. I don't mind Koska's game, to be honest with you.
Koska doesn't skate well enough, guys. He's a right-handed shooting guy who'll play the right side. The Jets have on the right side Bufflin, Bogosian, Trouba, Postma, Redmond. I just don't think
that is a problem. You do need a left-shooting defenseman.
So who are the left? You know, if Andrew Ferentz is the ideal free agent signing for a left-side defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets, who's the next tier of left-side defensemen that are free agents?
We're going through the whole list.
Okay, we can do it that way if you want to do it that way. Then let's go to Scuderi. Rob Scuderi out of L.A.
He'd be a great addition, a guy who's a solid stay-at-home guy. He takes away passing lanes pretty well. He's physical. He's not going to be the most efficient puck mover in the world, but he can do a solid job. I love his game, but would a guy like that come to Winnipeg?
It seems unlikely. He's coming off a four-year, $13.6 million deal, and It seems unlikely in this point in his career that he wants to be anywhere but a cup contender. So, you're going to have to overpay if you want to bring him in.
Yeah, you're going to. I don't think he's a guy. I think he's a guy who fits, similar to a Ferentz. Although, kind of like Ferentz's game in terms of all around for what the Jets need. But the Jets could use some physicality in the back end, too. So Scuderi would be a nice fit, but I just don't think it happens.
Okay. Zidlicky. Marek Zidlicky. As you mentioned him just previously, but a little bit.
I'll let Ezzy get in here in a second. Zidlicky's a guy who's not very big, and he moves the puck. And he can play on the power play, right-handed shooting guy. The Jets have enough guys who can play on the power play and aren't very big and offensively talented. I don't think there's any need for him here.
Marek Zidlicky did not play very well in New Jersey. He played well in the playoffs last year when the Devils went to the Cup against the Kings, and he was logging big-time minutes, but he was making $4 million a year. I mean, he was paid top dollar. Mm-hmm. By Lou Lamoriello and the Devils, and
the Wild, I think, right? And then
he's regressed. Might have been a trade, and the Devils didn't re-sign him, and that tells you a lot. If a team like the Devils is not re-signing him, he's got his deficiencies defensively. He's a pretty good skater, and when he was on the Minnesota Wild, he was a really good power play guy. I think a couple of years he had 50 points with the Wild, but again. You have to factor in that the Jets going forward are pretty good on D. Like, going forward, you've got Bogo, you've got Trouba, but those are the guys that are going to be part of your team for a long time. And Enstrom. And even Bufflin, who's under contract for two more years. But more so, Bogo and Trouba and Enstrom. Those are guys that are all going to be under contract for a long time. We assume Bogo and Trouba's only in his first year of his deal. So you're going to want to bring in a guy who is also going to possibly be a mentor for Trouba. Mm-hmm. Again, they need a defensive defenseman. If you look at the teams that have done well over the years, whether it's L.A., whether it's Chicago, whether it's Boston, they have a mixture of size and speed. And sure, Chara gets a lot of attention for, you know, his offensive exploits, but it's really his defensive game mm-hmm. that makes him so valuable and the reason why he's a Norris candidate year after year. But, you know, they need a guy. So Zdlicky, again, you know, he's coming off a $4 million contract. What's he going to want? He's probably going to want similar type of money, right?
Not going to get it. I mean, he's going to be a guy who'll go somewhere, be more of a specialist in the power play and mm-hmm. play third pairing and come up for the power play and play a little bit. And he can move the puck and he'll get a job, but his best days are long gone.
Jordan Leopold, he's now in St. Louis, 32 years old.
Yeah, Jordan Leopold, the problem with Jordan Leopold is he's not going to provide any kind of a physical presence. He's not reliable. He's injured quite often. He can skate and move the puck. I mean, there's worse options if the Jets are really in a dire position and need to fill the spot. He could be somebody to consider, and he'll probably come fairly cheap. But ideally, I don't think he's at the top of the Jets list, but he's on the Jets list, I'd say.
Ian White, 29 years old in Detroit.
Ian White wasn't cracking that top six, and Ian White is a boy from Manitoba.
Yeah, Steinbach,
Manitoba, and again, right-handed shooting, got a pretty good shot, offensive guy, not great defensively. The Jets have too many guys like that. I mean, aside from the Manitoba connection, he doesn't fit into the roster.
35-year-old Tony Lidman.
Well, I mean, you know, Tony Lidman is a guy who, again, also he plays a physical style, and his best days are behind him, I think, you know, Calgary, Buffalo. He can provide a physical left-side guy, not going to be killing it offensively by any means. I bet you he's a name that the Jets are considering. I think it's probably a little bit of a push to put him back into a top-four role. But I bet you he's a little bit below Leopold on that list, but he's probably on the list.
Scott Hannon, 34 years old.
Yeah, Scott Hannon, I mean, he had a fairly successful playoffs for him. I mean, people thought he was basically done. But
he's left-shooting, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's a left-shooting guy, and he doesn't skate that well, and he's not going to provide too much offense. And he plays well in a San Jose situation where he's insulated by a lot of talented players and the way they play. Probably even below Ludman on the list, but probably right around there.
If you can get Scott Hannon for a decent cap hit, even though he's maybe not as good as he once was.
He isn't as good as he once was.
I prefer overspending money on an offensive-minded player. Ian White, you know, back to what Richie said, he was having trouble cracking Detroit's D this year, and there were a lot of question marks there. And, you know, he's, again, not maybe what they're looking for. The Jets are really looking for a specific player this year. I mean, you have to assume they're going to re-sign Klitsam. Not assume, but you have to imagine that they're going to take a hard look at it because he did a pretty good job, and this was his first... People forget this. I believe he's 27 or 28. This was his first kind of full-time gig in the NHL where he was playing night in and night out. You have to think that he'll get a contract.
Well, let's talk about Klitsam. He's an unrestricted free agent, so any team that wants him can get him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you're Grant Klitsam's agent, and let's do a bit of a mini version of what we've been doing for the last few weeks on Wheeler and Bogosian, what's it take to re-sign Grant Klitsam?
You're just going to take the best. I mean, you're probably taking the best offer out there at this point. It's probably his big contract that he gets, if it's big at all, and you know, quote-unquote big contract. He'll go around marketing his guy as being a guy who can get around the ice, who's got a good shot, who's grown into himself, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the Jets can't pay him top-four money. So if he's going to fit in the 5-6 role and they can pay him accordingly and use him up there if they need to, fine, but don't overpay. And if he can get a gig somewhere else, Anaheim, something like that, yeah, he'll probably go there.
He's coming off a two-year, $2.5 million contract, so his cap hit was $1.25.
Yep.
You would figure he's probably looking for a raise?
Slight raise.
Just a slight raise? Yeah. Even, you know, given that he had the best year of his NHL career?
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. He is what he is pretty much what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Continuing going down our list, Tyson Strachan.
Oh, God.
Tyson Strachan is a guy that played most of the season with the Panthers, as you know, but he's a guy, again, who's defensive, but, I mean, he's a veteran in the sense he's not a guy that really has established himself maybe as a veteran. He's played on the Panthers for a few years there.
He would lead the league. He would lead the Jets in minus.
He's a right-shooting defenseman, not a very fast guy. You know, looking at this free agent crop
he can move around, but, like, it takes him a little bit to get going, but he can move around. But, I mean, you don't want that guy.
As far as free agent defensemen go, and I think it's a long shot for him to end up here, because a team like Pittsburgh, I think, will go after him, I think, is what we were talking about. Andrew Ferentz is a guy, for me, for the best fit for the Jets. If you can get Andrew Ferentz, left side defenseman, in your top four, I think that would be incredible. But is he going to re-sign with Boston?
Yeah, your problem is right now, you talk Ferentz, Scuderi. I mean, why the hell would they not want to go from Boston and L.A. to Winnipeg? And I'm not talking about city-wise. I'm talking talent, team, championship ability-wise. They both won cups. They both know what it takes to win cups. And
Drew, what are you doing here?
That wasn't me. Timmy, who was that? What kind of music was that? That salsa music?
No, I think that
it's Jefferson Airplane.
That's what I thought it was.
Drew, really? What is this, the iPod game when you pick the song after 3 seconds?
Well, Drew saw Jefferson Airplane live in 1974, so...
I recognized it from the Forrest Gump soundtrack. Right?
This was from the Woodstock film.
Okay, but, I mean, the song...
Drew, how was Woodstock when you were there?
Woodstock? You know what? I was a little too old for Woodstock back then. It was a little beyond my years. I didn't think I'd fit in. Anyways, let's go to break. We come back. We'll do some more of these unrestricted free agent defensemen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the unrestricted free agents defensemen that are going to be on the market come July 5th. See who, if any, the Winnipeg Jets would have any interest in. Reports out of New York indicate that Alain Vigneault, ex of the Vancouver Canucks, is going to be the new head coach of the New York Rangers. We'll talk about that coming up in the final hour of today's show. But it is probably an advisable decision by Glenn Sather to hire Vigneault in that role.
Wasn't unemployed for long.
It's a good hire.
It's a good head coach.
Good hire. Mm-hmm. Remember Hire's Root Beer?
I was thinking about that, actually. It's funny that you mentioned that.
I don't know if you can buy that anywhere. Mug really took over the... Mug and Barks really took over that root beer market. But I remember when I was a little one drinking Hires and Tahiti Treat out of the fountains at Bonanza. Remember that restaurant? Anyways, that was...
Yeah, I used to hit the frozen yogurt at Bonanza. Yeah. Unlimited frozen yogurt. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just remember Bonanza, the TV show. continuing free agent defenseman Joe Corvo, a guy who only seems to ever play for Carolina, Ottawa, or Boston.
Yeah, L.A. for a period, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he was in L.A. for a brief
period. If you want a guy who doesn't compete hard and quits when the going gets tough. I've never been a big fan of Joe Corvo. I think that Joe Corvo, guys, is a skating, soft, puck-moving guy. He's got a good shot. I don't love how hard he competes on a nightly basis, and I think he's not a fit at all for Winnipeg. He couldn't handle the pressure in Ottawa, for God's sake. So, I mean, I just don't see him as a fit at all. This game is not something the Jets need. I don't think they need him in the room either, frankly. I think they can do far better.
I don't really think Joe Corvo's a fit. I'm going to skip ahead here. Richie mentioned him off-air, and I think he is worth bringing up. Mark Fistrick.
I was getting to him.
I know. That's why I said I'm stealing your job here. You know what? You're taking too long over here, Drew. Mark Fistrick was a guy the Oilers went out and acquired. He's 27 years old. He's a left-shooting defenseman, which the Jets need. Mm-hmm. And he's a physical guy. He's like a bulldog on skates, super physical guy, can drop the gloves, limited offensively, but the Jets have enough offense from their defense with Enstrom and Byfuglien. Mark Fistrick, tweet that out right now, Drew. That's a good guy for the Jets.
Yeah, but
good Edmonton boy.
But, I mean, he's a 6'7 guy, is he?
Not on the Jets.
Yeah, well,
I think he could be a second-pairing guy on the Jets.
No, the problem with Fistrick is his skating is poor. And
he's not the best skater, but I think you pair him up on the second line there, second pairing, I think he would be good.
I don't mind him as kind of if you're kind of doing a Stewart 6'7 kind of guy like that, but I mean, you know, I don't mind the idea of considering him, but as a 4-5, I just don't see it as a 3-4.
Ryan O'Byrne.
Ryan O'Byrne, you're talking bigger plotting guy, physical, but again, right side guy. The Jets have Postma, they have Redmond, they have Bogosian and Byfuglien, they have Trouba. I mean, he doesn't fit.
Wade Redden.
And Wade Redden, again, you're talking 6'7 guy. He's soft. He can move the puck a little bit. Not great defensively.
It's funny because Wade Redden is still on the Boston roster,
yeah.
Just like Ferentz.
Yeah,
so he is a spare, but I don't know if he's figures into the plans. Remember, he had a couple goals in the first round there.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I mean, I Wade Redden might get one more contract. I don't necessarily know the Jets are a good fit, though.
Yeah, I don't see that.
Brett Clark.
I mean, Brett Clark is a guy who at time back in Tampa was pretty solid. I mean, he's not kind of okay at everything, and to me wouldn't be the worst guy to bring in for the Jets. He's getting up there in age now, but you know, if you can get him on a cheap deal and have him kind of just be your depth guy. It wouldn't be the worst addition. I don't think he's going to be able to step up and do a big role, but I don't mind his overall game. It's all right.
You know, there's a lot of other guys we can go through, and they're all very similar to those seven guys.
Two things going for Clark. Left-shooting defenseman, Saskatchewan boy.
Yeah,
that's what Barry boy. The problem is here, guys, this goes back to what we were talking about last segment. You're probably going to overpay for the Douglas Murrays and the Jordan Leopolds and the Scuderis if you can get them. Ferentz in there.
Throw Hainsey in there.
Or Hainsey, but we're assuming he's not going to be back with Winnipeg. They would have signed him.
Hang on, Hainsey. Let me interrupt for a second.
It's not a great free agent class right here.
Tell me why. Tell me who's better than Ron Hainsey and that is
Andrew
reasonable
Ferentz,
expectation.
Andrew Ferentz is a better defenseman.
Fine, but we just said that Ferentz and Scuderi aren't likely to come to Winnipeg. So tell me right now, and I've said this from the start, before the trade deadline, tell me why the move wasn't to re-sign Ron Hainsey.
Well, you can't look at it in a vacuum. What is Ron Hainsey commanding? What does he provide? Do the Jets need more physicality on the back end? Because Postma and Redmond aren't that physical. Trouba is supposed to be pretty physical, and Bogosian's fairly physical. Buff, once in a while. Enstrom really isn't. Stewart somewhat is. Do they want a bigger guy who can play that role? I mean, Hainsey is going to be a guy who is can eat some minutes, but he isn't overly physical. He hasn't scored in 2 years. So what's he really providing for you? Well, and that's a question based on what he's giving you money-wise, and I don't know.
So who's your second-pairing left-side defenseman?
It doesn't mean we have to do it through free agency, but we're exhausting all the options in free agency because we're looking at this from a Jets perspective. What are your options to make your team better?
Right.
And I don't think paying Ron Hainsey big money or giving him more term, and I think also a little bit of a culture thing.
You think Ron Hainsey's got the, not that he's a bad locker room
fit. No, not at all. I'm not saying that at all.
But that it's time to bring in fresh blood?
Yeah, I think so. I do.
I don't think the plan was ever to re-sign Ron Hainsey.
Then why don't you trade him?
If you have an offer for him.
I don't think my personal opinion, I don't think they were getting a second rounder back. I think they wanted a second rounder. And I don't think anybody was offering that. They're not going to, why would you trade Hainsey for a fourth rounder? You've already got all the draft picks. I think they wanted a second rounder and didn't get it. That's what I think. That's just my personal opinion.
You could very well be right.
Do you want to talk goalies here?
I want to talk goalies
next segment. Okay, so let's keep going through the defense.
Okay, there's still some more, sure. Let's go Ben Lovejoy out of Anaheim.
I mean, I think Lovejoy resigns there. I don't think for the Jets he's a fit, but
he was a better fit in Anaheim, Richie, than he was in Pittsburgh. Yeah, I thought he was better than England. I like Eaton. Eaton's another guy, too.
You make a good point there, Izzy. He's better than both those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah,
England was one of the I couldn't understand why Dan Bylsma was taking out England for Eaton. I thought Eaton was a good defenseman for the Penguins in the playoffs.
I don't know why he's playing either of those guys.
Well, that's their options there. But you've got Bartuzzo, and there aren't very many options when you're getting down.
Yeah.
And Dupree, they didn't have a lot of confidence in. But Lovejoy, if he doesn't re-sign in Anaheim, I guess it would be a good fit. But we're talking about guys that could, in theory, be top four defenseman. If you're putting Klitsam in a position where he's a top four defenseman because of injuries to other guys, you're gonna have to pay top dollar to get an Andrew Ferentz in here. And I think they should. Again, doesn't matter how much I think they should. It's a question of does he even consider Winnipeg? A guy like Andrew Ferentz, if he doesn't resign in Boston, he'll have no shortage of suitors.
And that's why it's unlikely that Winnipeg would be the destination there, because he's going to have suitors who have real, legitimate cup aspirations.
And you have to also make sure you don't overpay for a guy just based on the market.
Well,
Ron Hainsey was one of those guys in the first place.
That's exactly right.
Jordy Benn out of Dallas. He's one of the only young guys on this list.
I honestly, Drew, couldn't tell you much about Jordy Benn.
Surprised that he wasn't re-signed. He was playing a little bit. I don't think he played the full season.
26 games.
I was going to say half of the season there. Jamie Benn's brother, obviously. But, again, a guy that hasn't had too many years in the NHL. And, again, what are you penciling him as? Again, if Richie and I disagree whether Mark Fistrick can be a left-side second-pairing defenseman, can Jordy Benn fill that role? I mean, you'd have to make the argument that Fistrick would be a better option than Jordy Benn. He just hasn't had tons of NHL experience.
Alexander Sulzer.
Bigger guy can actually move pretty well for a bigger guy, but he's not going to be, it's a guy who had trouble cracking Nashville, trouble cracking Buffalo. He's Vancouver for a cup of coffee there as well.
Yeah.
And, not a guy who's going to be more than a depth seventh guy.
I mean, that's just what I mean. We're dealing with. I mean, I'm going down this list, and these guys are all guys who are really at the, you know, at best hoping for 1 year contracts because they're at the end of their career. You know, Adrian O'Coin, you know, for example, or are just 6-7 real depth guys here. And I mean, I don't see that any of these guys being an upgrade over much of the Jets' depth guys that they brought in. You know, the Jets brought in Archer's Kolda at the end of the year, and he didn't play one game for them. He sat in the press box for the last, 15 games of the regular season.
No, it's going to be tough for the Jets to fill that role in the offseason, but I'd have to think that Chevy would love to fill that role. And in addition to the center position, and the right wing.
It's just
the team's got a lot of gaps here. And you know, a lot of that has to do with what the Jets were left with from the Atlanta Thrashers. And that's why I wouldn't be surprised either if the Jets don't trade too many of their draft picks. 3 second-rounders and a first-rounder, it's a pretty good luxury to have when you're trying to restock the system, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of, but they do need to play, they do need to field a team next year or ice a team next year. And right now, there is that very glaring void, you know, in addition to the void on the second line right wing position, which people talk about often. Nobody's talking about the void left from Ron Hainsey. And I think
it's a huge
as
void.
Much, you know.
You played 25 minutes a game last year. That's, yeah. You can't, it's, you don't just pluck those guys off of trees.
That's my point. As much grief as Ron Hainsey got, somebody has to fill that void, and there aren't a lot of options right now.
The Jets, Drew, have 10 unrestricted free agents. Or maybe that's the RFAs, but they've got, I think, 10 unrestricted.
They have seven UFAs.
Seven UFAs and three RFAs, right?
Well, actually, they have more than that if you include some of the real depth.
Okay, so they do have 10
seven
UFAs.
Seven NHL UFAs.
10 UFAs. Don't be surprised if less than half of those guys are signed again.
If you don't trade draft picks, the question is, what are you trading to get better?
And
has to be a roster player.
Well, and the answer, I think, to most people, you know, is Buff. But Buff's value is pretty damn low right now.
Well, do you look at trading a guy like Brian Little? Do you look at trading a guy like Alexander Bobrovsky, who might end up wanting to sign in the KHL? You have to look at options because, you know, no offense to these guys, but it's not a strong free agent class, especially, you know, with the salary cap changing, you know. It's going to be tough to offer a guy $4 million when he's not going to significantly improve your team.
How do the Jets get significantly better for next year when they're in a harder division and a harder conference? And that is a question that's very difficult to answer. And it requires a lot of creativity. And standing pat and doing the whatever and waiting longer, maybe it serves them well in the long haul if they could draft appropriately. But if they can be creative in their roster now, it will certainly help. And that's the only way to do it. What we're really saying here is there's not much in the way of defensemen on the market. And if you want one, you're probably going to have to overpay, as the UFA market's generally inflationary in any event. So how are you going to address that need? Can you trade? Are you going to trade? Who are you going to trade? Are you willing to make a risk on a trade? Calculated risk, but a risk nonetheless. So these are questions. I mean, this is a big summer for Shevelyov. He may do nothing. He may do a lot. But I think, that, again, we've said this on the show before. It's going to say a lot about his time in Winnipeg, what he does this summer, because it's really going to show you the vision and how he's probably going to act on a go-forward basis. I guess next we got to talk about goaltenders.
Let's talk about goaltenders. We'll do it after these commercial messages. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Little Fleetwood Mac to start off the final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Like, is there incense burning right now? Like, or is Stevie Nicks in the room? Like,
it's very fitting, though. It's off the Rumors album, and this segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For nearly 20 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. 25 years, pardon me. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Mike Winfield is in town, and of course, coming up still later on in August, Steve-O from Jackass is going to be there. They've updated the comedian calendar going through all the way through the end of October, so be sure to check it out at rumorscomedyclub.com. Talking about some free agent goaltenders now, boys.
Good little band.
Fleetwood Mac, they're a good little band?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not?
No, they are. I don't disagree with you on that one. We finally found some common ground. The goaltenders are a little bit better in terms of what's out there than the free agent defensemen were. Let me ask you this question before we really get into them. Should the Jets be looking for a goaltender that can, you know, sort of be more of a mentor for Andre Pavlik, or should they be looking for a goaltender who can push Andre Pavlik?
I think they should be looking for the best possible goaltender to fill the backup role. And I say that without any sarcasm. I said it quite a bit on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and on NHL Midweek. I thought that Claude Noel should have played Al Montoya more. I thought when he did play, he was pretty good for the Jets. And I kept pointing to that 1-0 game on the road that they beat the Ottawa Senators, a pretty good Ottawa Senators team. And Montoya is not, you know, a spectacular goaltender, but he gets the job done. And, you know, they decided to really ride Andre Pavlik a lot. And he played, I believe, almost the most minutes, if not the most minutes, in the NHL this season. He was up there for sure. He started 42, 44 games or whatever it was. But I think they... I'm not necessarily saying that they shouldn't re-sign Al Montoya, but if you have the opportunity to sign a guy like Anton Khudobin, who I think is highly coveted by a lot of teams because he did a really good job and had really good numbers as Tuukka Rask's backup this year. But I don't know that he needs a mentor. I mean, he's a pretty good goalie. I think you need a guy to push him more. And I think that Al Montoya definitely deserves... you know, some consideration to be re-signed. Because look at what he did this year. He just came in and he did his job. Didn't have too many starts, but when he was in there, he was pretty good. So you're not. I don't know necessarily that you're bringing in a Habibulin or, you know, a Nabokov to be a mentor. If he's going to do a better job as a backup, then that's what you should be looking at.
I agree with Ezzy in terms of best goalie, Drew. I don't think mentor. I mean, Pavlik's not 18. You know, I don't think mentor. I think you're bringing the best goalie who gives you a chance to win the nights he's playing. And if he ends up being, you know, exceeds expectations, then great. I don't think you worry about that so much. The question is who's going to be willing to take backup money. I mean, you see Tim Thomas's name there, likely not going to be on the free agent market. We don't know, though, for sure. There's speculation kind of both ways. You look at Nicklas Backstrom, and it seems still makes sense for him to go back to Minnesota if they can make the money work. And then you're looking at guys like Habibulin and Nabokov, and Mike Smith is a guy that you think also makes sense for him to go back to Phoenix if there's enough money there. Chris Mason, he's been on this show, and he's a stand-up guy, but his best days are far behind him.
If he wanted to be in Winnipeg, he'd still be here. They offered to re-sign him last year.
Theodore is not what he once was, far from it. Matthew Garon hasn't proven to be and have the ability. So I think you're looking at the couple guys you're looking to target, or, you know, as you mentioned, Khudobin, you look at a guy like Ray Emery. If he's wanting a shot maybe to have a little
Ray
bit more
Emery
play.
Had one... I think it was one or two losses this year.
Yeah.
He had zero losses. He was 17-0 this year.
There you go.
Three shootout losses.
Yeah. So you had the shootout losses. But when you're talking about guys that you'd want to maybe bring in that would do a better job, Ray Emery is one of those guys. Mm-hmm. I think Ray Emery is going to get scooped up, though. The way he played, I think a team is going to want to sign him.
I mean, I think if you can get a guy like Nikola Habibulin on a one-year deal, come back to Winnipeg and he gets injured all the time, but if you don't have him play a lot, I mean, it's somebody to make a call on.
Is he an upgrade over Montoya?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Still at 40?
Doesn't matter. Still an upgrade.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, so, you know, let's look at this list. Is Nabokov an upgrade over Montoya?
Yeah, Nabokov's an upgrade, but Nabokov, I mean, he's probably going to see if he can go back to the Islanders and be a starter for a playoff game.
If he doesn't get a contract, and again, Nabokov is not going to be signed cheaply with his Vezina trophy and the fact he was the number one goalie at times last year for the Islanders.
He was the goalie in the playoffs.
You got to immediately cross off any guy that has aspirations of being a number one goalie. So Emery, in that sense, could also be crossed off the list, and he's going to get raise over $1.15 million. So
why doesn't Anton Khudobin have aspirations to be a number one goalie?
But, I mean, the question is, guys, is go around the league. How many goalie openings are there for the number one spot?
Well,
aren't many.
Edmonton, I would say, is up for grabs.
I don't know how many guys are better than Dubnyk.
Well, how about Calgary with Kiprusoff?
There's a story, yeah.
Kiprusoff's career is over. We know that. So, I mean, you have to throw in guys.
Minnesota.
You have to throw in Luongo, and you have to throw in Brizgalov if he's bought out, because those guys become free agents too, right?
Bernier
as well. Right. So those are the big guys.
A guy like Thomas Greiss out of San Jose. Guy who had high hopes, a German guy. One of the young goalies that San Jose had that they had, you know, stockpiling there.
When you have the...
Philly, of course. We don't know what's going to happen there.
When you have that defenseman hole, and you have the holes that they have up the middle and on the right wing position specifically, because on left wing with Kane and Ladd, they're pretty good there. But you're not going to spend – you can't pencil in $3 or $4 million for a goaltender. I think we'd agree with that, right?
Well, they're paying a starter already. So, I mean, how much –
That's what I'm saying. So all these guys – Emery, he's going to want $3 or $4 million probably.
No.
Canton – he had no losses last year. He's making 1.1. He's not gonna accept less money.
The question is for him: is his hip gonna be able to hold up to be a starter? That's a question. So you have to pay him accordingly. I think for a guy like Abbie Boulin, though, I mean, that's a guy I think that they should target, because you can spend a little bit of money on your backup if you need to give Pavlik more of a break to succeed. Okay, if you push him a little bit with a guy who's been a starter, I don't mind that either. You give him a 1-year deal, maybe pay him a little more on a 1-year deal if he's willing to play in the NHL this year. And you look at it. I mean, maybe that's something to consider. Maybe you look at Yan Denis for success in the AHL. I don't know. I don't think you automatically default back to Montoya by any means. I think you look at these guys, and there's certainly, as he makes a good point, there's other goalies to take into consideration. There's going to be a market there. Some of these guys are going to be here for a little while, I think. So the Jets should be able to secure a pretty solid backup if they play their cards right.
With Montoya last year, he obviously wasn't their first choice in terms of goaltender. Well, I mean, there was Gustafsson, and they had offered Mason, so he was their third choice. But you know, that Abbie Boulin one is an interesting comment. I didn't expect to hear you say that, to be perfectly honest. And I'd be surprised. You think he still wants to play in the NHL, and you think he still has what it takes to be a backup goaltender? Because you don't want, I mean...
He's not a number one goalie anymore.
I know he's not a number one goalie, but you got to remember what happened last year.
He's too old to think that he has more than a couple years left in his career. So.
When Montoya got injured last year, the Jets didn't have a viable third option. So they had to keep trotting Pavlik out there night after night after night after night. And this isn't even at the end of the season. This is sort of in the middle part of the season. They couldn't give him a break because they don't have a quality third goaltender in the system that they felt comfortable putting up as a backup and playing.
He's committed to Pavlik as your starter. You don't really have, you've drafted some young guys in goal, but for the most part, you've committed to Pavlik for your starter. He's going to be your starter for the long term. You pick the goalie, as he mentioned, who gives you the best chance to win when the backup's playing and can push as much as he can, and I think he'd be a really good guy to consider.
And it's got to be a veteran. I do think Khudobin is, he'll get, I don't even know if he'll maybe go back to Boston for one more year, but Bernier and a guy like Backstrom or Nabokov or Mike Smith, these guys want to be number one goalies. Mm-hmm. Jets don't need a number one goalie. I mean, right. Pavlik, it's not even a question. They played him so much last year, and then they're not going to play him maybe as much. But in an 82-game season, I wouldn't be surprised if they played him 70 games or at least 65 games. So you don't want a guy that, might be, your goalie a few years down the road. Sign a veteran to a 1-year deal. They only signed Montoya to a 1-year deal. Sign a guy to a 1-year deal, and when he's in there for 15 games, you're confident in using him. I don't think they were confident in Montoya, and I didn't really understand that. He was good for the Islanders against the Jets, and when he was in the lineup, he was pretty darn good. So,
I just don't see Khudobin or Emery being viable options. I think those guys want a number one goaltending,
yeah,
a shot at a number one goaltending position.
Yep. You have to take in consideration Emery's hip and then Khudobin. I mean, I haven't seen him play enough to really comment on his game, and I'm certainly no goaltending expert, but Boston does have a way of making their goaltenders look awfully good.
Agreed, but that's not his fault necessarily. I mean, if I'm him, I mean, I'm hitting the market, and Calgary in this instance, where there's a real possibility you're going to be the number one goaltender if they went after him, or Edmonton, where nobody's really that sold on Dubnyk, is a lot more appealing than Winnipeg, where Pavlik is pretty entrenched there as the number one. You mentioned Abbie Boulin. Aside from Abbie Boulin, and the other guys who really we don't expect are in a backup position, Backstrom, Smith, Nabokov, is Montoya the next best option after that?
They're all pretty similar, Drew. I don't know if he's any better or worse than the other guys that are out there. So I don't think the Jets need to desperately get him done, because I think there'll be other guys like him available. There's more goalies than there are spots right now.
I like Montoya, and if you're not going to go after a veteran that we've talked about, so if you're not going to go after a guy like a Abbie Boulin or a guy like maybe Yan Denis, who's a little bit older, who Richie mentioned had success with the Hamilton Bulldogs in the AHL, then you look at Montoya and you say, okay, well, we got him for basically the league minimum last year. He got us 3 wins and 6 starts, I believe it was, including a shutout. I think that I should say that I would be confident going into the next season with him as my backup. I have no problem with that. And I don't really I think a lot of people weren't really big fans of Al Montoya, and I didn't really get it because I thought he did a pretty good job. I'd like to see him play more. I think he should play more. I don't think Pavlik should play 75 games next year. That's just my opinion.
I would agree with you. But if you think that Montoya is the option, is the answer, that's the time will tell if the Jets agree with you or not, or if they try and get their hooks into one of the other guys who are still on the market.
Right.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Minutes past 2 p.m. here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Well, Jimi Hendrix, now we're playing some good music. It's what Drew used to listen to right before leading up to Woodstock 69.
Psychedelic stuff.
I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock are over there generally making fun of me.
I gotta say something. I just tweeted this out. You know, Huss and Jay are down at this block party downtown for UFC 161. I want some of this Zion's energy drink that I'm hearing about, and that's no bull.
You just promoted one energy drink with the slogan of the other energy drink.
Huss knows what I'm talking about.
I know Huss knows what you're talking about. Too bad.
Nobody else does,
but yeah, that's the Cheetah energy drink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good commercials.
Anything with Ben Johnson in it, you're in favor of, right?
Cheetah.
Did they get Ben Johnson in those commercials?
That's who's in those commercials.
Was
he racing a horse beside a car?
apparently he raced in Toronto earlier this week. Sean Fitzgerald, I think, either tweeted something or wrote an article about it. He's 51 years old.
At Woodbine against a horse or
no? I think
race?
It was against people.
Times are. Must be tough for Ben Johnson. Like, yeah. What did they offer him? Like, a case of energy drinks to race, like, an actual runner?
I couldn't tell you. But
the best was when he did steroids the second time. The first time, whatever, but the second time when he came back.
It was a great, I don't know if you saw it, the ESPN 30 for 30 on the Seoul Olympics in 1988, about involving that. That was a terrific one of the...
It's odd, Drew, because you have no soul.
Oh, clever. That's actually kind of rude, to be honest. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I'm okay with the age jokes.
Now we're getting to Drew's soul. Drew has a beautiful soul.
Thank you, Ezzy.
I've seen that soul, unfortunately, and there are actually popular, contrary to popular belief, there is nice things in it. So
we need it. I'm a soul man in the background, Tim.
Yeah. We'll come back from the next break with that.
Who
Rangers
that
hiring
again?
LMV.
Who sings that again?
James Brown.
That's right, Sam.
Sam Cook. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Timmy.
Vigneault hired by the Rangers.
Yep,
right decision?
I think it's a good hire, Drew. I think there's the appeal of hiring the Messier Gretzky. I think Sather at the end of the day sees a team that needs to win now. A coach who's done it, before. A coach who's got a more of a defensive slant, but is not as insane as John Tortorella, and I think is far better to handle the media. The media pressure in New York will be very similar to the media pressure in Vancouver. Vancouver has a lot of media and a lot of pressure, and I think Vigneault will be able to handle that with his demeanor. I think the question is, will his style changes for the team work in their benefit? I think it will. I think this is a good job for him. I think he got an awful lot of young talent on the back end with Delzato and with McDonough, who's a stud, and you got Girardi, and you got Stahl, you got Lundqvist and Net, you got some nice pieces up front, some star players, some young guys. If they fiddle around with maybe their depth lines in the off season and make sure they solidify some of the roles and change their style a bit. I think this team is certainly a contender next year, and I think Vigneault goes right into from one veteran team to maybe not as old, I don't think probably average age, but another team that's got a lot of experience too. So it's an all-in-all, I think it's the right move for New York.
Yeah, it's the right move. It's no secret that the Rangers wanted him right after they parted ways with Torts, and he was obviously fired by Vancouver, Vigneault, that is. But Richie mentioned that he's a great hockey coach. He was a Manitoba Moose coach before that, and then he did a fantastic job with Vancouver, almost won a cup with Vancouver. And unfortunately, the Canucks just couldn't get past that first-round hump. And I think that he will be a great hire for the Rangers. They need someone who is a tactical hockey coach and not someone who is a blowhard like John Tortorella. John Tortorella, as we've talked about ad nauseum on this show, at least ad nauseum for me, his act wore thin in the Rangers world, and he just couldn't find a way to motivate his players. Instead of motivating his players, he benched his star players. And Vigneault, I think, will do a great job there. I really do think that. I think the Rangers, too, haven't even scratched the surface because they're a young team. They've got a lot of young forwards there. And, you know, Lundqvist is by no means, you know, nearing the end of his career. He's got a lot of years left in him. So I think Vigneault is a terrific hire. I think Sather, you know, and I like how Sather hired him quickly, you know, going into the draft and all that. And he didn't wait till later on. I think he knew that Vigneault was his guy. And he went out and got him, and that's positive news for the Rangers.
Do you think they still buy out Brad Richards?
That's an interesting question, Drew.
We asked Andrew Gross that. He didn't seem to think that it was a foregone conclusion.
Yeah. I mean, you buy out Brad Richards, and up the middle you're looking at Stepan as your number one, Brassard as your number two, and then what are you doing with Boyle, and, you know, can you compete against, and Stepan had a really nice year, but can you compete against Malkin, Crosby, Giroux?
Richie Boyle's a UFA.
Yeah, well, yeah, there you go. And Zajac and Henrik and...
No, he's not. He's UFA after next year.
Oh,
and
sorry.
Tavares. And, I mean, you're going up against big-time centers in that division, and obviously the divisions are changing next year, but Richards, getting rid of Richards, probably long-term, it makes sense. But you're also looking at a guy in Vigneault who got a heck of a lot out of Sedin, who aren't the best skaters either, and who are veterans, who are good passers, or especially Henrik. That's a really tough one. I think they're trying to win now, which I think they are, and they do have some defenseman contracts to do. I'm going to say probably not, but I'm not very confident in that.
Maybe the most important or promising aspect of the Alain Vigneault hiring is that he tends to promote offensive style of hockey. And Tortorella didn't. And I think that's what they need. They need an injection of an offensive mentality there, up-tempo. Tortorella just didn't seem to get the most out of Rick Nash. I think a guy like Alain Vigneault can get more out of Rick Nash than a Tortorella.
Will Vigneault make hockey fun again for the New York Rangers?
I think it's hard not to make it more fun when you just get rid of Tortorella. I mean, if you put like a monkey in coach, they'll have more fun than they did with Tortorella.
It's an interesting...
Do you have a monkey that you have in mind?
Maggie the monkey from TSN. I think she's still alive.
Not the IKEA monkey, though.
Wasn't Maggie a macaque?
A macaw. So,
macaw.
Macaw, yeah.
I thought it was macaque.
It's spelled that way, but the C-A-Q-U-E somehow means macaw.
It's nice that we have a linguist on the panel who also likes linguine. A little pause there.
What about Messier?
Richie is right, though. I mean, anybody after Tortorella. I mean, Tortorella, you know... towards the last couple of years, what can you say anymore? I don't know. And it looks like Vancouver's considering him for their coach. I don't think he's the right guy. That's just not my personal bias.
Vancouver
either.
Is the most blatant team interviewing every coach ever imaginable just to get all of their ideas and then take them and put them into a lockbox Mike Gillis keeps in Francisco Aquilini's like safe room.
Which is what the Oakland Raiders were famous for that with Al Davis, is they'd interview 1,000 assistant coaches just to pick their brains about, you know, which does make sense to some degree. I mean, I think it does make sense to do that. So
Martin has a great chance there to get the job.
John Stevens is the guy I'm watching out for there. John Stevens, the current LA assistant coach. He was the head coach in Philly, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, he head coach in the Philly Phantoms. They won with him, I believe, with Richards and Carter on that team. He went to Philadelphia. He was eventually fired and then went over to LA. I think the concern with John Stevens, and I don't know a ton about John Stevens, but a career AHLer, won 3 championships. He's won basically everywhere he's gone. Won the cup last year, so he's won, I think, 4 Calder Cups and 1 Stanley Cup. Has a good track record. Richards and Carter, love the guy. So he seems like a good hire. The one caution I'll throw out there is, you know, you hire a guy who's been Daryl Sutter's assistant. You learn a great deal from Daryl Sutter, but Jimmy Playfair, you know, those guys haven't necessarily had the success when they're running their own show because, you know, you're still Daryl Sutter is Daryl Sutter. So I think it'd probably be a good hire, but that's just the one thing I'd throw out there.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to focus our attention on the NHL draft. We're going to be joined by Lindsay Hofford. He is the OHL London Knights Director of Scouting. He's going to join us to talk about the upcoming NHL draft from the Ontario Hockey League prospect perspective. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2:30 in the afternoon here on TSN 1290. The UFC 161 block party is in full swing by the MTS Center. Head down there. Talk to Jay and Hustler. You can win tickets to UFC 161 later tonight at the MTS Center. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Lindsay Hofford. He is the Director of Scouting for the London Knights of the OHL. Lindsay, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Glad to be here.
Lindsay, we wanted to go through a list of about the 9 or 10 top OHL prospects for the upcoming NHL draft at the end of this month, going to take place in Newark, New Jersey. We're going to be down there, of course, broadcasting here on TSN 1290. We're trying to familiarize our audience with some of the players who will be selected in that first round, including some who might be selected by the Winnipeg Jets. The first player on our list that we want to talk about is Sean Monahan from the Ottawa 67s. The 67s had a rough year this year, not very successful on the ice, as they saw a lot of guys graduate out of the junior ranks last year. But Monahan was able to put up 78 points in 58 games. What can you tell us about Sean Monahan?
Well, my son's the same age as him, so we played against him in minor hockey. So his big plus is his hockey IQ. He's a very intelligent player, sees the ice very well, makes the players around him better. His skating's come along. He's got good size, but definitely a guy that the team that drafts him would be leaning on to put some numbers up for him.
Darnell Nurse is a defenseman for the Sioux Greyhounds, and you know he gets notoriety for being nephew of Donovan McNabb. He's moved up the rankings quite a bit over the course of the year. He posted 41 points in 68 games this year. Pretty big guy. Can you tell us about his game and his potential?
Yeah, he actually played for my company, Pro Hockey Development, when he was growing up, so I know quite a bit about him. Again, just a natural athlete. He moves really well for a big guy. His passing has improved since he's been in the OHL, but another guy that's, you know, kind of a two-way D with good size, good foot speed, and probably need another year or two in junior when he's done, but definitely a guy that they're looking at to develop into a frontline player.
Lindsay, you're, of course, the director of scouting for the OHL's London Knights, and we got to start asking you about some of the London Knights that are projected to go in the first round. We want to start off with Max Domi, who's, of course, the son of Ty Domi. You have had a big part in his development with the London Knights. A lot of people think that his draft stock has gone up since the Memorial Cup, and, of course, that famous move that has become a YouTube sensation, which I don't think Ty was able to ever pull off at any level of hockey, but what can you tell us about Max Domi, having seen him develop since a young age, and do you think that he's going to go higher than maybe he was projected to go earlier on this season?
Yeah, from talking to the scouts in the National Hockey League, I'm pretty well guaranteed he's going to go higher than where he's ranked. He's one of the most dynamic players in the draft, just excellent first-step quickness, sees the ice well, can really skate, just a complete dynamic offensive player. A little bit undersized as far as the height goes, but tremendous strength, excellent shot. He's one of the most skilled guys in the draft for sure.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the OHL draft prospects with the director of scouting for the London Knights, Lindsay Hofford. Lindsay, you know, a lot of these prospects, given that they're, you know, 17, 18 years old, you know, are tall. They got the height, but their body might not necessarily have filled out yet. That's not the case with the next guy on our list, another guy you're very familiar with, played for the London Knights, Nikita Zadorov, 6'5", 230. How ready is he to get into the NHL?
Well, he's moving in the right direction. Definitely, like, when we got him, he was a little bit... you know, when you move from a different country into a different league, it's a tough adjustment. But as the year went on, his A game became more and more consistent. And I think his whole game is just consistency, but he just reeks of potential. He reminds me a lot of Larry Robinson, to believe it or not. But he can take the puck blue line to blue line, a big guy with a long reach, lots of skill, excellent skater. So really, the sky's the limit for this guy. He could go up in the draft as well, based on it. Until his game really progressed.
Lindsay, the final London Knight who's projected to go in the first round, at least according to Craig Button's rankings, would be Bo Horvath, and he was a guy who was talked about quite a bit in the Memorial Cup as well in terms of maybe increasing his draft stock. Can you talk about his game, you know, what he brings to the table and how you see him, you know, taking his career to the next level in the NHL?
Bo, again, a kid I've known since he was about 9 years old, so a real character kid. So I think he's, you know, their teams will look upon him as a potential leader, a great two-way guy, clutch scorer, got a very good stick, excellent in the face-off circle. Again, plays the full 200 feet of the ice. And it's just going to be like when a team has that draft position, what they're looking for, because Bo had an excellent playoff, actually ended up winning the MVP of the playoffs in the OHL, and then had a great Memorial Cup, and he was logging 23 minutes a game. So again, another outstanding prospect that has good size and will make a fine pro as well.
Another guy that we wanted to ask you about, Lindsay, was Ryan Hartman. He's ranked a little bit lower. He's projected to be a late first rounder in some lists and higher on other lists. I've only watched him a little bit play for the Plymouth Whalers of the OHL. He's a smaller guy, a right winger, but you hear a lot about his versatility. What can you tell our listeners about Ryan Hartman that they might not have heard about because he's a lower first-round draft prospect?
Well, a U.S. kid that is known for his compete level, and you know, and a lot of these guys, they're based drafted on their potential, so the strong work ethic, a good skater, and you know, a guy again that, you know, as they go lower in the draft list, there's a little bit more risk involved, but a guy that can definitely has a chance to make a long career out of the National Hockey League.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as we discuss the Ontario Hockey League draft prospects for the upcoming draft in Newark, New Jersey at the end of the month. We're joined by Lindsay Hofford, Director of Scouting for the London Knights. And Lindsay, we talked about Max Domi. He's got obviously the pedigree with Ty. Kirby Reichel, the son of Warren Reichel, a guy that a lot of people remember, played for the Windsor Spitfires this past year, 87 points in 68 games. He's a left winger. How does he project in the NHL?
Oh, I love Kirby. I actually was coaching with Warren last week in a spring hockey tournament, and I coached Kirby all the way up through minor hockey in the spring, so I know him well. He's a big guy whose skating's come a long way, you know, just a block shot, excellent offensive skills, really good around the net. Strong on the boards, a good cycle guy. There's not a lot of downside to his game. Again, he's got the pedigree with Warren. So, you know, he's been pushed hard his whole life, and he's come a long way in the last 5 years, that's for sure.
Now, Jason Dickinson, Lindsay, is a guy who, I haven't seen him play, of course. You look at the stats, and usually guys in the OHL or in the CHL who are coming to their draft, you're projected higher. Kind of at least point of games players, and you look at his numbers, you know, 18 goals in 66 games and 47 points. Does he bring other things to the table that make him an appealing option in the first round?
He's got great speed, excellent skills. I mean, he's a 95. Some of these guys are 94s mm-hmm. that you're talking about too. Yeah. So he's got another year to develop, and I think his game will definitely develop. I just think with him, it's just a consistency thing. They show flashes of brilliance in certain games, and then other times the kids kind of disappear, and that's where, you know, the scouts have to, there's a little bit of risk involved with the consistency factor, but I've watched this kid play a long time, and he's another good athlete with good speed, good work ethic, and I think he'll develop into a fine player as well.
Lindsay, the Jets have 3 second round draft picks, and we're not necessarily saying that they're going to draft these guys, but they are guys that are projected to go early in the second round. Chris Bigras is a guy who played for the Owen Sound Attack, had 38 points in 68 games. He's projected as a top 6 defensive defenseman. What can you tell us about him, and is he projected to go in that second round according to your list, or do you think he's maybe a guy that has been overlooked a little bit?
He could go on the bottom of the first, even. I mean, again, this guy's a a true leader, an excellent kid, not overly big, but is strong on the puck, very coachable, solid two-way game. I see him more of as a defender, but a good first pass, not overly dynamic offensively, but very solid, and a guy that can play in the National Hockey League for 15 years, given the right situation.
Lindsay Hofford is the director of scouting for the London Knights. Lindsay, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon, providing this insight into the OHL draft prospects, some terrific insight into some players we, our audience, definitely didn't know that much about.
I appreciate you having me, guys, and good luck at the draft.
Thanks, Lindsay. Take care. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break on TSN 1290. Thank you to Lindsay Hofford, director of scouting for the London Knights, for joining us to break down some of the OHL draft prospects. The draft at the end of the month in Newark, New Jersey. The two gentlemen to my left, along with Dave Minuk from IllegalCurve.com, will be there live in New Jersey, bringing you all the latest NHL draft coverage. We'll have you covered in its entirety, both here on TSN 1290 and on IllegalCurve.com for all your draft news.
It's a pleasure. It was a pleasure, I should say, to have Lindsay Hofford on. The London Knights are one of the most respected organizations in all of junior hockey, specifically the OHL. You look at the guys that have come out, the Horvat and the Domi, but you know, Patrick Kane, Sam Gagne, it goes on and on. The Hunter family does a great job there, and it was nice to have him on. We're trying to, you know, as Richie said last week, we're going to try to have a QMJHL guy on, an NCAA guy on, and try to cover all the leagues leading up to the draft. 10 draft picks, Drew. That's a lot of draft picks, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see the Jets draft a guy from each one of those leagues.
Sure. Certainly very possible, and that's why we're going to break it down for you here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
That's right.
Next week, like you said, Ezzy, a QMJHL. We'll get somebody on to talk about the QMJHL.
Yep.
Maybe I'll reach out to Grant Saunier. Of course, he's the new general manager of the Prince Edward Island team.
Yep. New franchise.
The Charlottetown Islanders,
yep.
A new franchise in the QMJHL. So he,
is Rick DiPietro their starting goalie?
I don't think so, but he at this point in his career, he probably could be. But anyway, so stay tuned here to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, rather, for all your latest NHL draft news ahead of the draft.
Come on, Drew, finish strong. Finish strong here, Drew.
You're my boy, Drew.
Thank you. Ezzy, I like you. Richard, I'm relatively indifferent about at the moment. NHL TV ratings have been terrific.
Yep.
They have been.
Does this surprise you at all?
Why don't you tell the...
I'm opening it up, so I'm stalling right now for time.
Well, Chicago, Boston, two huge markets in the U.S., two original six teams, mm-hmm. Two teams that have won the Stanley Cup, both in the last 4 years, I should say. So we're going to have a argument. Is it a mini dynasty forming or whatever? But the most important thing is you've got two huge American markets there, two really good teams, two teams that were high seeds in their respective conferences, Boston being a little bit lower at four, but they could have easily been two, Montreal, you know. So I'm not surprised at all. And I thought, I mean, guys, you start off the Stanley Cup Finals with a triple overtime thriller.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you going to top that? You can't really say there was anything left to be desired after that first game.
It drew a 4.8 in the overnight ratings, which is the best for a cup final game, game one rather, since 1997 when Philadelphia and Detroit drew a 5.2. So, you know, drawing a 4.8 triple overtime, I mean, you know, there was a buzz about that game, and it's probably only going to continue into game two here.
And you know, I think it should be said, too, that, you know, and not that this is what it's all about, but it's also an appealing Stanley Cup final to Canadian fans as well, because mm-hmm. a lot of the good players are Canadian. You look at Chicago with Taves and Boston with Bergeron and Marchand and Horton and Lucic. I mean, there's good players from everywhere. I mean, Slovakia's got Char. I mean, you go Crawford. You go up and down the list. It's not like this is a Canadian versus U.S. thing, too. Mm-hmm. But I think for Canadian hockey fans, you know, hardcore hockey fans, I think this is appealing, too, because it's an original six series, two teams that were so good in the regular season. So I think this is an appealing final. I'm not sure what the Canadian numbers are, but...
Canadian numbers are always good.
Exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, Drew, they get the biggest rating since 97, and that's, I mean, that's tremendous. And I think that the quality of this series may even get better, and I think interest will rise. Obviously, that's compared to Game 1 of 97, but I think interest will rise, and I believe it moves to NBC on Game 3, right?
No, Game 1 was on NBC.
Okay.
Game 2 and 3 are on NBC Sports Network so that they can give their their cable sports network, you know, some boost. And then 4 through 7 are back on NBC nationally. So I expect you to see
a time that they've actually rather have these games on NBC for game 2 and 3 of those ratings.
I expect you'll see a dip in the ratings tonight as a result.
Yes.
But you know, this sort of is NBC's way of trying to force cable companies to carry the NBC Sports Network on a more prominent, you know, spot in the channel rotation if they haven't already been doing so. But I mean, you look at it, and it's just, I mean, how much benefit do you think that the NHL gets from the fact that the NBA championships, the, you know, San Antonio just doesn't draw anybody?
Yeah, San Antonio doesn't draw anybody, but I think both series are great quality, and you have the LeBron factor. So I don't know what the NBA ratings are, Drew. I looked at the NHL, obviously.
They're down.
Yeah, they're down. Well, they're down because you mentioned San Antonio, but I think overall it's good for the NHL to obviously, you make a good point, the NHL to have a rise in their ratings, an increase in their ratings when the NBA is having a decrease. Get closer that way. And if you can do the old Mark Cuban model of saying, why don't you just include the Canadian ratings as a North American rating, you're probably going to have bigger, you know.
Yeah, you'll have huge numbers at that point. The top markets, of course, were Chicago and Boston. No surprise there. Mm-hmm. And outside of Boston and Chicago, they were Providence drew a huge number, but that's pretty much Boston, you know, at an 18.5 rating. Buffalo at an 8.5 rating, just proving time and time again that the Buffalo market is just a tremendously strong hockey market.
Yep.
And then Milwaukee at a 6.1. Again, Milwaukee with its proximity to Chicago,
right,
there being in terms of that rating.
Yeah, and it should get high ratings. And the playoffs as a whole this year, Stanley Cup playoffs, because we were talking about the NBA playoffs, but the Stanley Cup playoffs this year have been fantastic. I think we've seen a lot of overtime games, and we've seen upsets. You saw the Islanders early giving the Penguins run for their money. But, you know, the fact that the season started off with a lockout and now we're having, you know, these great games, we're seeing, you know, just hockey at its best. You know, just going for it. You know, we're seeing overtime, which I think is the best thing in sports. Mm-hmm. First round of the playoffs, I think, is the best time in sports. But, you know, it's been great. We're seeing, you know, there's been a few controversies, but nothing major. And we're seeing, you know, just good old-fashioned hockey, and that's really what it's all about. You know, that's what people want to see. They just want to turn on the TV, see a good hockey game, best team wins.
Devils made a run last year. They weren't really as good as L.A. And obviously, L.A. made a run, too. But overall, Devils weren't that good of a team, and the finals, I think, demonstrated that. I think the year before that, Vancouver-Boston was great, great theater. I think this year probably will be great theater as well.
Well, I mean, you talked about the market size, and I mean, last year was Los Angeles and New Jersey, and I mean, I know New Jersey is not the biggest, but there's a lot of people that live there, and it's pretty close to New York City and everything, so there's a lot of tie-ins there, but that only drew a 2.3 last year.
Surprising.
You know, to more than double it on the overnight ratings, is that, I mean, do you think that the game itself really aided in that?
I think it helped. Yeah, I do. I think people get into the game, and they see it's going on, and they... Somewhat, and I think obviously it being a close and then going to overtime, I'm not sure if that was a peak rating or what that was exactly.
I think it's the average rating at 4.8.
Yeah, so that's how I read it when I read that article. And a game getting tight, 3-3, you see it on the ticker in another station in ESPN, and you move over. I think that's how it works, too.
Mm-hmm. It's also up, I mean, in Chicago, if you want to look at it, Chicago locally, Chicago drew a 25.1 rating for the game in 2010, when they played the Flyers, it only drew a 16.9 rating. So it's up, you know, 49% in the 2 years there.
Which is crazy because it was a big deal when they were playing Philly, and Philly's a nice draw. It's showing you how big hockey has come in Chicago, and it was big. I mean, obviously, the Wirtz reigned over for a period of time there.
They weren't
televising local games and such, but there always was a thirst for it, and now you're seeing them. This is what they talk about. A cup allows you to springboard further, and they've really done that.
Talk about hockey's never had any problems in Boston, but Chicago and Pittsburgh, you're talking about two markets that were in big trouble. You're talking Mario Lemieux had to come in there, and Sidney Crosby getting drafted first overall really saved the franchise. Mm-hmm. They have a new arena there. Chicago was drawing flies in a 21,000-seat arena, and now they're one of the best teams. And the scary thing, again, not a good thing for the Winnipeg Jets, but a good thing for Chicago, is that this team is still young, and they could win a cup next year. Why couldn't they win a cup again next year, or at least get back there, right? I mean, this isn't a team where the window is closing anytime soon. Kane and Taves are both still in their mid-20s, so they're in good hands. And it's always good to see a hockey market, you know, rebound and do well. I mean, you want all these teams to continue to do well, right? That's the plan.
You mentioned Pittsburgh. We sort of very, very glanced over the Malkin contract. Any problems with the Malkin contract signing? This is what the, or is this what Pittsburgh had to do?
I mean, you're looking at one of the top three players in the National Hockey League. You're going to sign him for the maximum amount of 8 years. You get him for under 10 mil. No. Crosby's not as much of a comparison because he signs for a longer term. It's a no-brainer from both sides, really. You don't have an issue with the best players getting money for a long term.
Exactly. Last week, when we were previewing the Stanley Cup Finals, people were talking about maybe the Penguins are going to trade Malkin. And what did we say? That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You don't ever consider trading one of the top players in the world unless there's a reason to. And it proved that was wrong. Ray Shiro said, okay, Evgeny, we're going to give you this amount of money for this amount of years. The negotiations probably went very quickly. And he's a cornerstone of the franchise. So, you know, no problem with that. He deserves a lot of money. He's a top talent.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock waving frantically.
I'm going to give a jeer this week.
Oh, you're usually so positive.
I'm going to read a quote.
Uh-oh.
Honestly, winning is my number one priority, and I feel this team has a good chance to win. Quote from Sergei Gonchar, saying after signing a 2-year, $10 million deal with the Dallas Stars, that winning is his number one priority. I call bull. And that gets my jeer.
That's no bull. I'm going to cheer. Hopefully I'm not stealing yours. If I am stealing it, I'll give you another one. I'm going to cheer Harry Neal. I wanted to get Harry Neal on the show. Good. I don't think we were able to get him on. Everybody knows him from doing the color with Bob Cole. He now does color for Buffalo Sabres.
I don't think he does very much anymore.
Well, he does some. He works, I think it's MSG, right?
Okay.
He does some.
He does with Rick Jeanneret.
That's Rick Jeanneret. He does color. But he's one of my all-time faves along Bob Cole. He's going to get the Foster Hewitt Award for hockey broadcasting. He's going to join the Hall of Fame. No-brainer. Harry Neal is a class act. You know, that's my youth right there, listening to Bob Cole and Harry Neal growing up, listening to, you know, Jets games when they were here and Leafs games particularly. So good for Harry Neal. He well-deserved nomination into the Hall of Fame.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to jeer the Vancouver Canucks, who put their AHL affiliate in Utica, New York. You got no problems with Utica, New York, but that's a lot of travel to call somebody up to bring them over. Now, I don't know what their relationship was like with the Chicago Wolves and everything else. That's where their affiliate used to be.
Yeah, I believe the Blues are now going to use the Wolves as their AHL affiliate.
I thought the Blues were
in Peoria,
I'm not 100% sure. Anyways, Utica to Vancouver is not an easy flight, and I don't think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter because their minor league team sucks.
Okay, well, that works as well. So they're not calling up anybody from their minor league system, right?
Maybe that's why they did it.
That could be it. They could save some money at that point in time. That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guests, Anthony Sanfilippo from PhiladelphiaFlyers.com and Lindsay Hofford, Director of Scouting of the London Knights. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes, on IllegalCurve.com, and on TSN1290.ca. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website is www.IllegalCurve.com. For producer Tim and producer Michael Remus, for Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk. Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.